And now here's David with the people, and I'm sure it was a great relief of the people. The king is now in the gate, and the king has now taken his position of kingly authority. Someone said, the crops don't grow where the shadow of the farmer doesn't fall. The farmer needs to be around his crops, tending them that they might grow. The shepherd needs to be around the sheep to tend to them. And so the king needs to be around the people, that they can see him and that they can take confidence. And they can know that he's now in touch, doing what God has called him to do.
As we gather, may your spirit work within us. As we gather, may by your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
Aloha kakou e komo mai. Welcome to As We Gather, the Bible teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel Honolulu with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Today, Pastor Bill continues in 2 Samuel chapters 19 and 20.
We'll be blessed because we came. You will be blessed because we
Now, David just got word that Absalom is killed. He's dead. And David hears the news, and he goes into a grieving process. He's beside himself. It's a disproportionate grief. Now, you say, well, Bill, his son just died. And I realize that. And I think the worst thing for any parent is to have a child die. I mean, I can't imagine anything that's worse than that. And I have been with families whose babies have died, whose teenagers have died, whose young ones have died, and it's a horrible kind of experience. And I've had friends like Pastor Greg Laurie that I'm close to, and I've seen that process and seen what they go through, and it's horrible. And yet, when you look at David, he had a son who sought to murder his father. Absalom wanted to murder David and bring down the nation that really God had set up and God had watched over. And you really see by Absalom's actions, it was really a reproach against God, the God of Israel. And yet David has this excessive grief, and it's really a lopsided kind of grief. I mean, obviously, you're not going to say, well, that problem's over. No, you have a sense of grief, but this is, you know, really uncalled for. And I think the reason why is not just that a son that he loved died, because there is that great grief, and I've seen that. I haven't had to experience that myself, and I wouldn't want to experience with a son or a daughter, a grandson, a granddaughter. I don't want that. I think the parent should die before the child. I mean, that just seems to be the way, you know, God has made it. And yet, I think David was living with regret. And I think a lot of the grief that he experienced was unrequited love. He had it bottled up inside of him, and he couldn't let it out. And I think he was plagued with the guilt for lack of involvement in Absalom's life, but not only Absalom, his other sons and daughters. He didn't necessarily train them. He didn't discipline them. He never, you know, got involved in their life, and he was afraid to offend them, and you find that in the scripture. And so I think he was dealing with something that is deep inside of him. What he should have been as a father and what he wasn't as a father, I think he was experiencing that kind of grief that he wished he could have been. Remember when Absalom had killed his brother, Amnon, who had raped Absalom's sister, Tamar? It was the half-sister of Amnon. Remember, different mother, same father, David. And 2 years later, Absalom retaliated and killed Abnon, but then Absalom fled. For 3 years, he fled. He was away. But finally, when he came back, when David was grieving over the fact that Absalom was gone, Absalom came back, but David refused to see him. David gave him the silent treatment. We read in the parable of the prodigal, when the prodigal son came back, what did the father do? He ran to meet this repentant son and hugged him, put the ring, put the robe, put the sandals on him, forgave him. But David, he stood afar off. And it had to be Absalom who did something bizarre to try to have a meeting with David. And so I think what we're seeing here is David. David had this grief, and it was a one-sided kind of grief. For lack of involvement, I think, in the lives of his kids, and especially in the life of Absalom. Now, what is happening at this point? Because he's grieving beyond the point of what would be normal at this point, he's losing. He's losing the kingdom. He's losing the loyalty of those people that fought for him against Absalom and against those that rose up in that coup. He's losing them. And so you find here in chapter 19, well, let me read it in verse 33. Here is David's grieving. Notice in verse 33 of 2 Samuel 18, it says, "And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate." Now, this is after he heard of Absalom's death, "and wept. And thus he said as he walked, 'Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" You see, that's going on for quite some time. And so now we come to chapter 16 and we see what's going on within the people who fought and even died for David and his kingdom against Absalom, who was their enemy. And it says in verse 1 of chapter 19, "Then it was told Joab, 'Behold, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned to mourning for all the people. For the people heard it, said that day, the king is grieved for his son.' So the people went by stealth into the city that day as people who are humiliated steal away when they flee in battle. And the king covered his face and cried out with a loud voice, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.' Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants who today have served your, who have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, by loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now." Those are pretty bold words from a commander to a king. David could have his head cut off. But what he's saying is true. I mean, Joab is really putting his life upon the line. And the Bible tells us faithful are the wounds of a friend. Deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. I think at this point, no matter what you think about Joab, because he's kind of a mixed bag, he's very erratic, but at this point, whether he's looking out for himself and his own command of the army, looking out for Israel, or looking out for the Lord's interest, whatever it is, you find that Joab is now, in a sense, really exhorting David to snap out of it. "David, you're overdoing it. It's a disproportionate kind of grieving over a son who wanted to bring down the kingdom." And so you're giving the impression, David, that you wish that Absalom were victorious instead of us, instead of you, David, and me. It's like you have more of a love for Absalom, more of a concern for Absalom than you have for those that love you and are loyal subjects to you. David, you're giving the wrong impression. And you're shaming the people. They're afraid to even come into the city and go out of it. They come in and go out by stealth. They're just ashamed of this. Now, you know, we have to, and I've seen a lot of commentators look at, yeah, that's a reason David, the kind of father he was, he's grieving over a lot of the way he treated, you know, Absalom and how he was to Absalom as a father, you know, falling short of that. But there are others that say, well, maybe he's weeping over the fact that Absalom, he just figured he wasn't saved. He didn't know the Lord, and he's weeping over the fact that, remember what he said of that child that God took, you know, after the sin with Bathsheba and that the child, the little son that was born? He was probably about 2 years old when he got sick and died. And David, after David fasted and prayed, and the Lord still took that child, and then after the child was dead, he washed, and he said, okay, now you can fix me a meal. And they couldn't understand. You were so in grief, you know, when the child was sick, and now he's dead, and you seem like you're okay. And he said, I can't go and, I can't bring the child back and be with me, but I'm going to go and be with the child. So here David realized that there's an eternity, there's a heaven. And this child is in heaven. And maybe possibly over this grieving, he's recognizing maybe Absalom isn't there. And maybe that's the grief. But nonetheless, whatever David is grieving over, it's rooted in unbelief. It's not believing God is sovereign, God is in charge, that there is a heaven, there is a hope. And usually when a person gets in this kind of situation, you know, what do you do? What do you do when there's excessive kind of sorrow and grieving? Remember Elijah, after he had the contest with the prophets of Baal, and then Jezebel wanted to kill him, and he ran. He ran and he hid in a cave. And the Lord was saying, what are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing? And Elijah's explaining himself how he's, you know, he's for the Lord, nobody else is. And you can read it in 1 Kings 19. But what does the Lord say to him to get him out of this sorrow, to get him out of this grief, out of this pity party, basically? He said, Elijah, basically snap out of it, get back up and get back into your ministry. Go and anoint Hazael, the king of Aram, and go do your ministry. You see, that's exactly what, and that's good advice, and that's exactly what Joab is telling David. Go do ministry to the people, David. You go sit in the gate and minister to the people. Make yourself known. And so he does. Verse 8. So the king arose and sat in the gate. When they told all the people, saying, behold, the king is sitting in the gate, then all the people came before the king. Now Israel had fled each to his tent. Now, David, at this point, and you probably know how that feels. You don't feel like you want to do something, but you do it anyway. You see, David, he doesn't feel like doing what Joab is telling him to do, but he does it. He does it anyway. And he's really doing it for the sake of the people. The people need it, David. And so David does it. And so I think sometimes we need to be exhorted out of our negative feelings. We need to be exhorted to do what's right. Even though you don't feel like doing it, Bill, do it. Even though you feel contrary, this is what's right to do, so do it. You know what I found when I get an exhortation like that? And usually it's from my wife. I call her Holy Spirit Junior. And, you know, usually when I do that, it's interesting what happens. Eventually, you feel like doing right. You know it's right. You don't feel like it, but then you start doing it, and then you feel right. You feel right about that, and you're glad you did it. Now, the last time, remember the last time the people saw David in the gate? The last time is when he heard from the Cushites. You know, the one from Ethiopia, the runner that Joab had sent, and he said, "Your son Absalom is dead. May all your enemies be like that boy." And then at that point, you find David, he fell into a place of grieving, and David disappeared. And you could probably hear his wails throughout the city of Jerusalem as he was crying out for his son Absalom. And I think that's what made the people cower at that point. And now here's David. David now is again back in the gate with the people, and I'm sure it was a great relief of the people. And I'm sure it gave the people great confidence that here the king is now in the gate and the king has now taken his position of kingly authority. You see, so important. Someone said to me years ago, the crops don't grow where the shadow of the farmer doesn't fall. In other words, the farmer needs to be around his crops, to tending them that they might grow. And it's the same with the shepherd. The shepherd needs to be around the sheep to tend to them. And so the king needs to be around the people, that they can see him and that they can take confidence. And they can know that, you know, he's now in touch. He's doing what God has called him to do. Verse 9 goes on, and all the people were quarreling throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines, but now he has fled out of the land from Absalom. However, Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now then, why are you silent about bringing the king back?" Interesting. Very interesting how the people are hesitant in returning to David. Here, the one that they were following is now dead. I mean, there's no chance. There's nothing left. They left David to follow his son, Absalom, and now they're saying, "Hey, we should go back to David," but they're now really fickle. I think it's interesting how fickle people can be. And it is sad. It's sad when people will vacillate in following now David, God's anointed and appointed ruler, after following his son, who is a rebel, who created insurrection and had a horrible character, had a wretched character. And the only thing that drew the people to Absalom is he charmed them. Oh, he was very charming. Remember it said he stole the hearts of the people away? Well, that's not a good thing for a leader to do, to steal the hearts of the people, act in a certain way to steal their hearts, and then you find that he's a horrible leader, a horrible character. You know, it's really interesting when you look at certain elections around the country and in our country or other countries, and I'm sure glad that Benjamin Netanyahu, I think he's one of the great leaders of, probably the greatest leader, you know, in our day and age right now. He stands on principle, and I love that when a leader stands on principle. He doesn't speak out of both sides of his mouth. He doesn't try to steal the hearts of the people and then do the complete opposite. You know, I think he's a great leader. Golda Meir, you know, if you look at Israel, another great leader, Margaret Thatcher, you know, and some of the others, Ronald Reagan, you know, some of these that are, you know, very straight shooters, and their character speaks louder than anything else. And that is important because so often in presidential elections, I just wonder, you know, it just really confuses me. I wonder why dishonest and deceitful people whose character is dishonest and deceitful, they're elected over and above those with integrity. It's amazing. And you don't want to really bash those people that are dishonest and deceitful. That's just their character. You want to go, what is wrong with society? What is wrong with these people electing them? It just totally amazes me. But I have to go, you know what? I can look back in the Bible 3,000 years ago, and the nature of people hasn't changed at all. Here they're going after Absalom, and now they don't know, should we go after David or not? And even when they do go after David, then another false leader rises up and they leave David again. It's just amazing how fickle people are. To me, it's a great tragedy. You see, following Absalom, what did it bring to those people that followed him? Well, misery, division, betrayal. And now after seeing all that, they're still confused. They're still confused and they're still fickle in giving allegiance to a man that God had chosen. He wasn't perfect, but he was a straight shooter and he sought God. David is the one. Well, let's go on a little farther here. Verse 11 says, "Then King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, saying, 'Speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house?'" Now remember, David is of the tribe of Judah. "Since the word of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house, you are my brothers, you are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa," remember Amasa was the commander of Absalom's army, and now he's reaching out to Amasa, "and say to him, are you not my bone and my flesh? May God do so to me, and more also, if you will not be my commander of the army before me continually in the place of Joab. Thus he turned the hearts of all the men of Judah as one man, so that they sent word to the king, saying, 'Return to you and all your servants.' And the king then returned and came as far as the Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal in order to go to meet the king, to bring the king across the Jordan."
And that's where we'll finish on today's edition of As We Gather with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. This was a portion of a weekly Bible study from the book of 2 Samuel, chapters 19 and 20. You can hear this message again by visiting CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com and take advantage of our media archive. We really appreciate any support from our listeners. Your encouragement and prayer go a long way for this ministry. If you'd like to support the As We Gather media ministry, you can give securely online at CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com. And for those who would like to be a regular sponsor, you can set up a recurring gift on the schedule of your choice. May the Lord richly bless you as you walk with Him today.
Gather, may we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within. As we gather, may we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.
Next time on As We Gather, we'll continue in 2 Samuel chapters 19 and 20. Until then, aloha and agape.
We'll
will be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.